Hello, guys. Welcome to the Black Spin Global Podcast. I am Lucy.
And I'm Eugene.
And welcome to a Coco Gauff celebration pod. Make some noise. Yes.
Yeah. I ain't got champagne. I've got water. But it's
I've got water. You know what, guys? You know what? It's Monday. I nearly pulled out a gin and tonic. But I was like, you know what? I don't want people to be thinking I'm some alcoholic, right? Can't be out here drinking on a Monday evening. Like, it's not every celebration that we must drink. But with the way you people been yapping about Coco, I have no choice but to sometimes. But either way, how are you, Eugene?
I'm listening to you. Like you said, I'm on a high right now. Like, yeah, after just watching what we watched in
Wuhan. The whole tournament.
It's been great. Also, I love the fact that it was 1 week and not like 2 week nonsense or 12 days or whatever it is. Like,
listen,
just Shanghai back to back.
I felt like the Shanghai tournament was on for like 10 years.
Yeah, dragged. It really dragged.
That dragged. But we're going to get to that later on. That's a whole different topic. But
yeah.
Today, this pod is basically just to celebrate Coco and Jasmine Paolini because you guys did a lot of this. a lot of it. So just to let you guys know again, Coco Gauff, Wuhan champion, okay, princess of China. You know, last year she won China Open, this year Wuhan. This is her third 1000 title and her second biggest title this year so far, because we still had the WTA finals coming up and she is the defending champion, so fingers crossed. But yeah, it's been a remarkable run from Coco. Should we go through her path? So yeah, everything was going really.
Every single match won in straight sets as well.
She hasn't dropped a single set, not one. She hasn't dropped one. So the first opponent that she had was against Mayuka Uchijima. I don't know why I'm saying the names when you are right here.
Mayuka Uchijima of Japan. One in love. Mm-hmm. I want to say that was under an hour.
Yes.
It was quick. Pretty quick. And then it was Zhang Shuai, again, Chinese.
Mm-hmm.
Another quick one, so 6-3, 6-2. I think that was over an hour, but again, pretty straightforward. The quarterfinals, another bagel set, Laura Sigmund, 6-3, 6-love. yeah, so again, straightforward, and then it got tricky in the semi-final against Jasmine Paolini, mm-hmm. the seventh seed, 6-4, 6-3. It was a topsy-turvy 6-4, 6-3. So the first set, I'm going to say Paolini was arguably the better player. Like, she was playing really well. I thought the level was high from both.
That's the thing. It was high from both. It was very tight and they kept breaking. None of them was like hold and serve, basically.
Yeah, that was in the second set when they kept breaking.
Was the second set or was it the first set?
Yeah, the first set, they were both kind of holding. Yeah. I think it was maybe one break each in the first set. And then the second set, it turned into a joke in terms of they just kept breaking each other, back and forth. But yeah, like I said, that scoreline, 6-4, 6-3, I thought Paolini, she was disappointed as well because she was in the match. Like, she could have won a set and possibly won the match. But again, credit to Coco Gauff, man. Like, she just knows how
she
to...
I think it's also because of the high that she came off from beating Iga, which we'll talk about later. But
yeah.
I think when you have such an intense match like that, you're thinking, because, you know, I literally said it. I was like, if Paolini plays like she played against Iga, I think she would have been the one who lifted that trophy. That literally it. And it showed when she played against Coco, because she didn't play that same level.
Mm.
But it was still a really good match regardless. But yeah.
Very entertaining. And then obviously the final that we're celebrating right now against good friend, former doubles partner as well, Jessica Pegula, fellow American.
Yep.
6-4, yep. 7-5. I think Pegula, she won every single one of her matches in three sets.
Mm-hmm,
so
mm-hmm.
She was coming through a completely different type of path.
I mean, credit to her, she did have to beat Sabalenka as well.
True. Sabalenka
was
in the semis.
A good match too. Yeah.
She also played Hayley Baptiste as well.
True, that was close.
And Baptiste had her moments in that, exactly.
She did.
like Pegula, she definitely had to fight like her way through to the final. But yeah, just on the final, I don't know about you, Lucy, but watching it, I was confident Coco was gonna win.
Oh yeah.
Like, and even if it went to a third, I was still confident. The fact that she closed out in straight, so I was like, yeah, this is poetic. Like, it's meant to be. And again, like, obviously we're gonna sing her praises, but I can talk all day about her like mentality, because I don't feel like that's kind of spoken about enough in terms of like how she's, of course, we all know she's very resilient and like, you know, she doesn't get too down on herself. But then I feel there's also something that needs to be said about her weight, just her overall like attitude and like the way she carries herself on the court. Like, she could easily, you know, throw rackets or like throw a tantrum when she's like hitting double faults or, you know, things aren't working for her like on the court, but she's able to just like keep it cool, composed, and just, yeah, like just, she just gets it together all the time. And like, I just feel like for someone so young to be able to do that, it's really admirable. Like, and I'm saying that as a big man, like pushing 40, like I'm in awe, like watching the way she is, like just mentally, like she's an incredible human being, honestly.
I think she did that the best this tournament as well, especially that during the Paolini match, for instance, because there was one time where Coco was like leading and Paolini was catching up. Like, that first set could have gone like different. And you could see that she wasn't, like, normally the Orca would have probably looked at her box a little bit more, but this time she just went through it completely. But for me, I just feel like in addition to that, again, it just goes back to how much she's improved in her decision making and finding solutions so quickly, because it's frustrating for me, because it's like, I'm supposed to be here celebrating like, yeah, she won, she did this, but it's like, bro, I'm sorry that I have to touch on this, but it's like, a couple of days before that final, people were already writing off Coco for the season. I had to sit down and use my phone, use the internet that I pay for, to read comments from people who are trying to tell me that some players who have not won a slam had a better season so far than Coco. One, the season was not even over. Two, there is no such thing as a player beating better than you if you've already won a slam. The second you win a slam, you can't tell me someone had a better season than you. That is it. No one was saying that to Keys, mind you, as well, who literally even lost in the first round of US Open. And that's no disrespect to Keys, no ever. Some people literally trying to say that, yeah, Amanda had a better season than Coco because Amanda had 2 1,000 titles. Shout out to Amanda and shout out to her for getting her leg back from Iga. We've been rooting for her this thing. She was literally your pick for Wimbledon even. So we're not even going to, do you get what I mean? But I just don't like how people always write her off. Mm. It makes no bloody sense. 400 and something double faults and you guys still can't take that 1,000 title away from her. First serves being up and down this whole season, and you still could not take that slam and that 1,000 title away from her. How is she the problem? Why are we focusing on Coco? I do not understand. And then guess what, Eugene? When you sit down and think about it, and you look at Coco, and you look at the rest of the players, what's the difference? You think about that.
Wow. Are you going to say it?
Why do I need to say it? Why do I need to say it?
Doesn't need to be explained.
Thank you very much. Because I don't understand why the rules or the things always move when it comes to her all the time. Like I said earlier, no one has said that Keys had a bad season because she's won one slam. For whatever reason, for a 21-year-old who has accomplished a lot more than some of these players, and again, I've said it so many times, I think people always forget her age. I always said that you guys literally forget that Coco is competing with players that have been here way longer and much older. Mm. How old is Sabalenka and how old is Coco? How old is Iga and how old is Coco? Some of them were not doing what she was doing at 21. Or Sabalenka was also struggling with her serves at 21, but she was not winning what Coco is winning right now. It's after she's fixed it. Every year she was piling it up.
Yeah.
And she does not get the credit. Like, it's just so frustrating. Like, it's so frustrating. And I think the frustrating thing as well is that it doesn't even come just from the haters. It actually comes from the fans as well. Like, how can you do this? How can you do that? How can you do that? Like, the way people were talking about Coco after the US Open, you would think that this girl did not win a Grand Slam this year. Like, it's actually insane. Like, I was just, and that's what I was saying after RG, I was like, I don't give a toss what happens to Coco. She still won a slam. Wimbledon happened. Okay, of course, Wimbledon, she's not going to be doing great. She literally just came off of winning a slam, and then no one was doing great during grass season. Everyone was, even that men's final was boring as hell. Like, no one was 100%. We literally went out and kept saying it was too early for her to change up her serve in the middle of the US Open. When you actually sit down and think about it, that's actually some real shit. I will bleep that out. Don't worry. Like, that is actually some real shit. Who does that? Who says in the middle of a Grand Slam, I'm going to come and switch off my serve? And it looked like it paid off. She also didn't want to go to the Asian swing. I mean, her team didn't want to go to the Asian swing. She was like, F that. And look where we are.
I love how she called out the coach as well. Shouts out Jean-Christophe. But she was like, yes, and I'm going to expose him. He didn't want me to come.
He didn't want me to come. That's it. I feel, and that's the thing. It's like every time, what more does Coco need to do in order for you guys to not count her out? Because every single year she proved you guys wrong. Every year you guys had something. Last year you guys tried to do the whole one slam wonder, one slam wonder, one slam wonder. And she ended up getting the biggest paycheck, Trump check, from that WCA final. And also collected a 1,000 title. And then again this year, she still won a slam and then a 1,000 title. And there's always something. There's always something. And it goes back again. Look at Coco. Look at the rest of the players. And now if I say race, oh, you're race baiting. At this point, you guys are actually doing it on purpose. I'm so sorry. You guys are doing it on purpose.
I think with it being Black History Month in the UK, we are allowed to do a little
we
bit.
We are
now.
Allowed.
I'm joking.
We are allowed.
We are allowed.
No, but to be fair, I also understand that there's some people that also say it because they feel like Coco's tennis is not where it should be. For her to be winning the title.
She's 21 years old.
It, like I said earlier, bro, it does not matter. She's still got that title in her hand. I don't care if, like, it doesn't make any sense.
You make a really good point just about the comparison. And I hate doing this, but then this is the sport. Like, in terms of,
it's an individual sport,
so you're going to get compared to, like, your peers. But Lucy, to go back to, like, the mentality thing, like, and again, this is something Arthur Ashe said, like, back when he was playing. It's a famous interview. I think it was the BBC.
Mm-hmm.
After he won Wimbledon. It's a famous interview. Like, but the line was, or the question was, like, do you get frustrated when you see, like, John McEnroe basically
I remember that interview.
And he was like, yeah, basically, of course, like, it angers me. But I can't afford to do that. And Lucy, like, I'm sorry to go there, but, like, Irina Sabalenka against Pegula, there was a moment where she threw her racket, like, in anger, and, like, it I don't know where it went, but, like, it could have hit someone. I think it did.
There was a video, a clearer video, like a zoomed in video. It did actually touch the ball girl.
See, and that's what I'm saying. That reckless, like, behavior. And, like, listen, we all know Sabalenka, she's a fantastic competitor, again, mm-hmm. Grand Slam champion, mm-hmm. world number one, not taking anything away from her. But, like, yeah, but she has that in terms of, like, the ability to kind of lose it mentally, like, a lot. And I feel like she does get a pass, like, a lot of the time. Like, and I just feel like, again, to bring it back to Coco now, She's not like that in terms of that. That's not, like, in her DNA. Like, she's not mm-hmm. built like that,
mm-hmm.
which is she deserves a lot of credit for. But I do feel like if, you know, roles are reversed and that was her, like, whining out, it would be a completely different situation in terms of, like, just the way it's portrayed in the media, for instance. And, like,
we've seen again, it all over the years.
And again, Lucy, that this is why I'm so proud of, like, what we have here, because we can kind of bring these issues to light and, like, say basically expose it for what it is, really and truly.
Mm-hmm.
Do you get me? So I'm talking as a fan, but I'm also talking as like a journalist here, because this I'm saying it how I see it. And like you are too. So again, I just want to obviously this is a celebration for Coco Gauff, but man, like
is just keeping things real at it
100%
as well. Like just keeping things real, because to me it was like, because there was like that debate about which American WTA player had the best season. That's how the debate basically started.
Okay.
And when I was seeing people writing off Coco, I had to put my phone, because I was like, you guys are smoking on some serious crack, because there's absolutely no way you're trying to tell me that Amanda, who does not have a slam, had a better season than Coco. It makes no sense. It's not happening. I'm sorry. I'm sorry. And the thing is, the annoying thing as well is that, like you said, you know, the comparison is annoying, but is this thing, but they all individually had like their own true like story in terms of like the season as well.
Exactly.
You know, Keys, we've all known that this is someone where like everyone was happy for Keys when she won the slam.
It's been a career year for Madison Keys. Like no matter how you want to paint it.
Literally, exactly. You know, Amanda, same thing. Look what everything that she's been through, and after 2,000 titles, and then literally got her leg back from the Iga match right after. Like that's never heard of. And then you also have Coco, who had such a remarkable run for the clay season. Like, are we forgetting that she reached 2,000 titles back to back, and then reached the RG final and won and snatched that title away, and not just from any player, from a number one player on top of that as well, who was trying to get her titles. What, like, it's just so really, it's really frustrating, but I really hope that you guys find something that's not that strong in terms of whatever you're taking that's making you say the silliest thing in the world, and finally accept that Coco is a big player. She's big Coco, not the little one, like I said.
She is definitely big.
She is big Coco. She's the big three. When we're even doing the big three, you guys tried to put her away and put Rabakina. Who is Rabakina? Respectfully, what are we doing here? Do you get what I mean? Like, you guys are trying to take her away and put players that are not more deserving than her. Shout out to all the, first of all, a massive shout out to the WTA players this season. Hello, you guys have carried this season. Now, when you look at the list of the 1,000 titles, that 1,000 title winners of this season, the only top player that was not there was Victoria Mboko, and no one can dare say she did not deserve that title. So can you imagine?
And like, even her too, I've seen some mad, like, comments. There was a commentator that said, oh, like, basically, yeah, she's like had a rough time since winning in Toronto. I mean, yes, but at the same time, again, it's been a great season for her.
They need to stop talking and focus on the ATP that's out here doing cousin reunion in the final in the 1,000 in Shanghai. Like, let's be serious. Be serious. Don't worry about the WTA. We are stacked. We are ready. We are there. We are entertaining. We have top players doing big things. Focus on you fellas when Sin and Alcaraz are not around.
Nowhere to be seen.
Snooze fest. Even Onk Djokovic couldn't even do something. What is going on?
Back to Coco though, Lucy. The record in China is a joke, you know. Like,
that's why they call her Princess of China.
So she's only lost three times, like in the country. Like, so she's won 22 matches, lost three. it's just like, what?
Crazy.
And again, she's 21 years old. Like, I it's important to reiterate the age. I'm sorry. And like, I know we
it is. No, it really is.
Like when a player is like maybe older as well, but I think when you're dealing with someone this young, it's important to again remind people she's 21 years old. And again, there's a lot of improvement still to be made. And we're seeing it in real time. And
she keeps saying it herself. Every interview of Coco, you literally always have her saying, I know there's some things I need to improve.
Yeah.
And I know I'm going to get there. And while I am working on it, I'm also going to win some stuff. Some people are literally, they just stop completely or change completely or do whatever. But she is literally changed. Like, I've said this earlier this season. I'm sorry, but no one even gives her enough credit for the fact that she fixed her forehand. Every day, there wasn't a day you people have not brought up her forehand. Every single day. It's been like a year since she's fixed it. And what Not even a little. You know what, Coco? Congrats on fixing that. Nothing. After all the yapping you guys have done, if that's not proof that she can still literally fix certain stuff, what are we talking about here?
I also feel as well, like, obviously, I don't think we're guilty of it because, yeah, we're quite, like, fair. But there's a level of, like, when you're, like, a professional, you're kind of expected to just basically improve or get better at things. Do you get me? And I feel like, again, that is definitely where we differ because, yeah, this is a positive platform. Like, we give players their flowers, you know, rightly
but
so.
But I feel like we did that both. I feel like we did it well by when we realized that, yeah, she needs to fix the...
No, of course.
And when she fixed it, we said it. I remember saying it. I was like, guys, she's fixing the forehand. You guys are not saying anything.
Because what I want to go back to is the serve, like we said. Because, Lucy, we both said, like, this is a bit mad. Like, you switching up your serve before a Grand Slam, like, or during a Grand Slam. During. Like, it's like, this is unheard of. But yet, look, the results... And yes, listen, don't get me wrong. She hit some double faults. She was hitting some double faults in you know some of these matches. But at the same time, she was able to figure it out. And there's been improvements, and you can see the improvements.
Bro, I'm sorry, but if I have the most double faults in the season so far, like apparently she has like 406 double faults here, and I still collected two big titles. Do not chat to me. If I was her, I'll even caption 406. DF and what? So what? But you know what? She's just a generous person. You know, she put in Bible quotes. She even put in the Chinese and under caption. You know, she's well raised. This is I keep telling you this. There's a reason why God did not make me a tennis player, a successful one, because these are the type of things I will do. Because what are we talking about here, bro? What are we actually talking about? Like, I'm so sorry. I don't care. Like, yes, she needs to work on it, but like. To me, people make it seem like she's doing all of this and she's not making any improvements. It's just insane. Like, it's really insane. Like, at the end of the day, again, like I said earlier, I understand for like the perspective of like, you know what, her tennis might not be your favorite or what it is, or she's just a pusher or blah, blah, blah. Like, I get the end of the day, you know, it is what it is. But my frustration is the way that she's, everyone points at these players, all of them, but no one will ever convince me that it's not different when it comes to her and her different players. And we've seen, and the thing is, she's not the first black player that we've seen. We've seen this with the Williams sisters. We've seen it with all the other black players. There are so many players that are doing Higihaga since, but for some reason, the top three player, Coco.
How do you spell Higihaga?
I mean, Higihaga, I don't know. Like the top three player that's out there, she's the one that you're deserving the most. It makes no sense. But either way, massive congratulations, Coco Gauff. You shut those people up. Oh, sure you did. Shout out to you. You came in, new team, new stuff, new everything, and you bloody killed it, mate. Some of these points that she was hitting, it was absolutely insane. I feel like her fitness as well has improved even more, which is even scarier because that was one of her top things as well. Her fitness has improved.
Yeah,
but like, I don't know what happened, but it's like, I'm wondering if they had like extra training, but some of like her cross net points, especially during like the Paolini match, insane. Like she was really hitting and she was aiming for more winners. But yeah, and even also the double faults and the errors and stuff, most of them were happening in the second set. The first set, she tend to be, she was really locked in, like in most of her matches for this run.
But before we like move on from Coco, I do want to again, this is something that frustrates me, and I try not to let it bother me too much, but it does bother me, Lucy. So we all know Brad Gilbert. He wrote a book called Winning Ugly. Like that term is always associated with Coco Gauff, like winning ugly. Mm. We need to like let that go, please, because there's there's winning. Listen, it's a term. Yes, you can say, Eugene, it's not a big deal. For me, it is, because I feel like that kind of like diminishes like what she's doing.
Fair. Mm-hmm, that's fair.
And like, I understand. Yes, you know, tennis players have to like fight through matches where they're losing and like, yeah, they kind of find a way to you know, get back on their feet and turn a result around. But I just feel like, yeah, to always say that, yes, Coco Gauff is basically the crown princess of like winning ugly. I think like we need to stop that, because she's winning matches, and she's not just winning, you know, low level or, you know, unimportant matches. She's winning big finals. Like she's literally 9-0 in hard court finals. Like what the hell? At 21 years old, 11 titles, like you said, 3 at WTA 1000 level, 2 Grand Slams. Like, she's doing incredible things. Basically, at a very young age.
Half of her titles are big titles. Like,
this is what I'm saying. Like, let that sink.
Go on.
No, and also, yeah, I feel like we don't put enough like weight on the year-end finals, because that's the top 8 players in the world. Like you've got to literally get through the top. Obviously, you're one of them, but so yeah, you've got to get through like the top players in the world in order to get that title. And it's also at the end of the season, when we all know the season is so long. Like that is a massive achievement. And like, again, I think the only player the last player to defend the WTA finals title was Serena, I think, in 2014, 15. Like, it hasn't been done since Serena, basically. Like, it's a very hard thing to do. So I'm not going to sit here and be like, oh yeah, Coco's going to go and defend. But at the same time, would I be surprised if she did? No.
Listen, I think for me, the reason why I don't think is because, like I said earlier, I don't give a toss. The title's on her bloody hand. Come take your title. But either way, Coco, big up you.
Yeah, big time, big time. We were getting a lot of questions as well about, I say a lot, we had someone ask about the new member of the team, which you did answer. Yes. So it's a Frenchman, Johan Tallo. I hope that's how I'm pronouncing his, I hope I'm pronouncing his surname correctly. but yeah, former player. I think he's now her like new hitting partner. And I'm sure you guys have seen like some of the videos of them like dancing in like the lobby and stuff. And I think back at the house they were renting or hotel. Yeah. Just a fun vibe all around, man. Like it's brilliant. Yeah.
Really massive shout out to the team. Massive shout out to Coco. What a great two. And that's the thing, even in China, she did really well as well. So that's why I wasn't surprised when she did what she did at Wuhan. And I won't be surprised if, you know, she comes and do something at the WTA finals. Yeah. But she
won't play now until Riyadh. So I think she's going.
Yeah,
she's going
a lot of the players who are there are not going to play anything to WTA finals. I think right now, for instance, we had Osaka played a really good match today, actually. Naomi Osaka.
In Osaka.
But obviously, although we're supposed to be celebrating Coco, real quick, another person, like, basically, this podget is F all you people, in it, like, because you guys have just been chatting mad crap. I'm so glad that all the time when you guys were chatting, I just sat down, I just looked at my phone, just put my phone down, because you people are just speaking nonsense. Jasmine Paolini, I told you, come get your baddie chain, bro. Come get your baddie chain. Like, come on. Yeah, that's a
brilliant tweet. Brilliant
come
tweet.
On, because yo, first
but
of
again,
all,
we
I
said this.
Like,
we said
like
this on the last pod, Lucy. Again, I was like, you're like, oh, basically, people would argue with you and say that she hasn't had a good season. I'm like, what? It's been probably her best season yet.
People already forgot that she won that 1000 title, and then when she beat Iga, they're like, oh. And the thing, it's not like she just beat Iga. It's the way she bled it. Like, she did down, it in ways that literally, it was some ass whooping. She whooped that girl's ass left, right, center. Like, it's absolutely, like, even me, I was just like, wait, hold on, what is going on here? But my biggest takeaway from that match as well was, number one, when Paolini plays aggressive, these girls have zero clue. They don't know what to do. And I think they also don't expect it, because, again, like, when you see Paolini across you, you're not thinking that all this power is coming. It's coming
from
her.
5'4" frame.
Like, hence why, for instance, when he came with Serena, a lot of players were already thinking the worst of the worst, because not just because she's a great player, but because of the way that she's built.
Physique,
so with So with Paolini, it's like, oh yeah, okay. Even if you played it 100 times, it's still like not the same. But you can tell the massive difference between her and Iga that match is that she came with a plan. It's as if her and a team sat down for hours trying to figure out what's the best way to do something. Because literally, on top of her aggressiveness, she had a solution for every single thing. And Iga just did not know how to. And she was very quick with it. That's the thing about Paolini. I think she doesn't get a lot of credit with how fast she is with some of her decisions, some of her shots. She gives you no time. Like, Iga literally had no time. And that's the thing about Iga. She loves her time. Oh, how she loves her time. And Paolini gave her none of it. She's like, you know what, girl? I had enough of you beating me all these times. Is it enough?
Six and oh going in? She'd never beat
her. Six and oh, I think so. Yeah, exactly. So it's just, it was just incredible. But I think that's it in terms of Paolini, in terms of her singles thing. Obviously, she's going to WTA finals mainly for, I don't think she's qualified for the singles.
So yeah, she's playing Ningbo, so she could actually still qualify. So it's literally
So she's still playing. Okay,
her and Drava and Rybakina, they're playing for the last two spots.
Okay,
and they're
okay.
All playing in Ningbo right now, which is a 500. So it's just a lot to play. A lot to play for. Exactly.
Okay. Yeah.
And I think even Alexandrova could also qualify. Yeah. Pagula's also through. So
she's through. After,
it's literally two spots are up for grabs, and it's like four players are in there. So it's all to play for.
So who do you think? Who do you think is grabbing that spot?
I'm gonna say Paolini.
Okay.
I want to say Andreeva, and I think Andreeva deserves it too, just because I think she's had a very good season.
She had a very good season. She had a very good season. I wish people would not focus on her breaking out, because, you know, she's a kid.
And again, age. Exactly. So for me, I'd like to see those two. But then Rybakina too, like she's also had a decent year. She's not won any major titles, but the fact that she's been able to kind of maintain, you know, stay in the top 10.
Rybakina is just an interesting player, because you just,
all the stuff going on in the background.
It's just, you just be chilling and then you just see a score. Oh, Rybakina just won. You're like, wait, what?
She's dangerous. Very dangerous.
She's dangerous. Oh, no. Mm. She's dangerous. She's very dangerous. But yeah, we'll see. But either way, that was, it was so great from Paolini. And also the second thing now, I think it made me realize that Paolini has given us so many great matches this season. Like a lot, and I remember saying it years ago, like, she is someone where I really hope, if you're a tennis fan and you go to tennis tournaments, I hope you get to actually watch Paolini in person. Like, I've always said it, she's even way better to watch in person. Like, her matches gives you a lot of energy, and she's just really good. She's really, 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 like, fun.
That's, again, something I love hearing from people as well, like, either listeners or followers. They're like, oh, yeah, like, basically because of you lot, I know who Justin Paolini is. Like, I love watching her play. Like, I do love hearing that. Because, we were on her from early. Like,
yeah, for real.
So I'm going to give us our flowers there.
For real. She was incredible. She's been incredible this season. She's done well. And yeah, I mean, again, she's won the biggest, she's won the second biggest title of the season. And even her path through that was incredible. I'm really happy for Paolini. Like, she definitely deserved like a special shout out, because again, you guys were yapping. Just talking.
So, yeah, no,
anytime you guys yap, I'll come back and flog you guys back.
Good luck to Paolini and Ningbo. Who are we talking about next? Let's talk about the men, actually. Shanghai.
Let's talk about Shanghai.
Felix Auger-Aliassime reaching the quarterfinals. So he lost to eventual runner-up, Artur Rindignec, who lost to his cousin in the final. Is it Valentin Vacherot? A player ranked way outside, like the top 200.
Like 200, yeah. And that's going to be, like, I think, top 40, I believe.
Exactly, yeah. So that's like main draw, all of the slams next year, which is huge. It's literally, it's life-changing for him.
Yeah, from money to rankings to everything.
So Vacherot, he beat Novak in the semis.
He has some tough players to beat, but obviously beating Djokovic is definitely like a big one. Do you think Djokovic will announce his retirement next year?
I have no idea, honestly.
Same age as Monfils. Like, when do you think Djokovic will finally be like, "All right, is enough"?
I definitely think he's thinking about it, but I don't think it'll be next year.
Really?
Yeah. And I don't know. Has Monfils beaten him to it? I'm not saying obviously Monfils isn't big three like level, but like next year is 2026 is Monfils's year. Let's just be real.
The fact that he's
announced it, like, I don't know if now.
Yeah, you know what, Djokovic? Wait till 27.
Exactly,
yeah, don't come and then think. Keep playing. It's okay. Don't retire. Go onk.
Do you get me? Don't rain on Monfils's parade, man.
Like, you're right. Because if he announced it, these tournaments are going to be doing the most.
It's too much.
The most. So,
yeah.
Because Djokovic, he loves it. So he's going to do a whole tour. He's going to go to every single tournament. You know how there's even a limit? He's going to go to every single one of them.
But yeah, I mean, on Shanghai, I like the fact that, yeah, we have like an unknown, Lucy. I'm going to be real. But then at the same time, we're like, yeah, what are these guys doing? Like,
I am sorry, but it is shambolic, in my honest opinion. You know? It is shambolic because this is not the first time this has happened. And this goes back to my point earlier. I've been saying this whole season. The only player that took advantage of Sinner's absence was Draper, as in the top players.
Oh, okay.
Because aside from that Draper win, who was it again? That one thingy. What's his name again? Oh, shoot. Oh. What's his name?
The one what?
He won the 1,000 title, not Indian Wells, Miami.
Oh,
what's his name?
Mensik. Jakub Mensik, yeah, the Czech.
Came out of nowhere. Coming, winning this. That's what I'm saying. It's like, to me, it's extremely, I'm so sorry, guys. Like, I get it's a nice story, cousins, family. Yeah, the tennis story. No. No,
let's like scrap that.
Let's wake it up. Let's actually be serious. What are we doing here, lads? Carlos and Sinner are not there, and until none of your top players can actually secure it,
then men are playing. Was it Six Kings? Getting that
can
money.
Can we really be serious here? Can we actually be? And I think for me, the reason why I'm feeling like this is because I have to go online every day and read so many stuff that you guys have with the WTA. When you look at the WTA 1000 winners stacked, big mama, big stuff, big players. All of our top three players have won a big title. Hello? What are we doing? I'm sorry, in my honest opinion, I think it's embarrassing. If it happened just once, calm in it. Or at least if the player that won is someone where we've been hearing their name a lot, blah, 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 something. You know, Victoria Mboka, for example, her name, we were hearing it. She was getting there and her path was actually crazy. And at least that only happened once. But with the ATP, it's like, if you do not have Carlos or if you don't have Sinner, then you have some random guy. Embarrassing.
Doesn't this mean that we should give Sinner and Alcaraz more credit then?
No one is discrediting them. We've credited them even enough. I'm talking about the rest of the guys. I'm not talking about Carlos and Sinner.
Do you know what I'm going to say here now as well? And again, I'm not speaking from any kind of experience. Obviously, I'm not a pro ATP tour player, Lucy, but I do feel like the level now in men's tennis, like, it's high, man. Do you get me? It's high. Like, and I just feel like we're not at the stage now where, like, this literally, Shanghai is the example. This guy he was playing flipping challenges, like not ATP tour level tournaments. Mm. And he's coming to this 1000 level tournament as a qualifier.
Mm.
Beating like established ATP tour players, top 100 guys. Like,
mm-hmm.
yeah, he had to like fight his way through a lot of them. But yeah, he was able to win. Like, so my point is, things aren't like they used to be in terms of like basically guys that are out way outside the top 100, top 200 even, being, you know, the level being so far apart. Like, the gap's getting smaller, basically. That's the point I'm trying to make.
But isn't that a bad thing?
But is it though?
To me, it is when you only have two of them that's like really great, and then the rest is just
anyone can get it. Yeah. Yeah, I love that word.
No, like that's my thing. Yeah. That's my thing. Like all I'm saying is, especially for a one that I think it would have been different if it was a different level of tournament. I think it's because of the fact that it's a 1,000.
Okay. So what about this then? The fact that it's like near the end of the year, everybody's tired.
So Coco is tired and she lifted that 1,000 title. I know that's right.
Whoa. I don't know. Maybe I'm just being way too nice.
No. Do you know what it is? It's because it was this year, in all honesty, for me, I just feel like the ATP had so many chances to get away from having a different big winner from Carlos and Sinner, and they still were not able to, except for my guy Draper. I think that's what it is. Number two, I think it's also
What about Shelton? I think Shelton's done himself justice.
Sorry, Shelton. How can I forget? Oh my gosh, and that's the title that I wanted. Ben. Exactly. Yes. Yeah, Shelton. Exactly. Shelton did it. Thank God. Okay. Draper did it. Thank God. Okay. Hello. And Shelton would have probably done Shanghai if it wasn't the fact that he was injured, or probably even Feast. Do you get what I mean? And Feast's not even a top 10, but still, do you get what I mean? But like, and second, my second point is, it's also because, Eugene, I think you underestimate how people talk about the state of women's tennis. Like, I don't think you understand people talk about it. And I'm so sorry, you can't open your big fat mouth and talk about a WTA when we have cousin reunion at a Shanghai 1000. Like, let's actually be serious here. Let's be serious.
Do you know what I'm going to say to that? Like, we just need to do a better job at just ignoring that, Lucy, man, honestly. And I ignore it because the numbers don't lie.
It's there.
I know it's difficult because, yeah, we're all on social media, especially like Twitter X or whatever. Like, you see a lot of junk on that platform. But then, like I said, and like you just said, stats. Like, if we want to break things down, just look at the stats, look at the match figures, look at the match wins. And, you know, then you can like say whatever you want to say. But at the end of the day, rankings don't lie. Like, where players are in the rankings, that tells you the story. Like, that tells you all you need to know about like their season and like where they are as a player. Like, so everyone can have their opinion and yeah, we're all right. Yeah, free speech, whatever. Like, but at the end of the day, stats do not lie. So yeah, I think that's where we should kind of leave it basically. But I hear you. Of course, it's frustrating, especially when they're talking about players that you care about and like have some kind of affinity towards. Like, it is annoying. But yeah, I just ignore that shit, man. Honestly, sorry to swear. But yeah.
Well, we're going to see how it happens next year. I think, personally, I'll end with this since I am the... Lucy, you're too tough on these players. You don't even have to crack it. I will end with this. I do believe that next year, the ATP guys will have enough and they will actually shake the table a little bit.
Step up.
I think they will step up a lot more than this season. I think the season was more of a wake-up call. And I think next season, there's going to be a thing. Because also, Carlos and Sinner and them as well, like, it might be a time where... people might not be able to cut, because as much as they, you need to forget as well, yes, they won all these titles this year, but they have to defend all of that next year. They have a lot to defend next year. So I think next year is actually going to be tougher for Sinner and Carlos. The advantage they have is that they're basically aliens and they're hard to beat. But if these guys collectively get going to be like, all right, nah, it's actually enough, and take advantage of the fact, because Carlos has been the one crying about the tournaments and calendar and everything.
He's got a funny ankle right now as well. The ankle's not 100%.
The ankle's not 100%. That's what I'm saying. There's so much that your body can actually do. You can be all great, but your body's going to tell you, hey, wrap it up.
Mm-hmm.
So, cool. And the thing is, they're always playing at a high level because people against them are also trying to play at a high level. Like, as much as they are different, it takes a lot of the body as well. Just because they easily win, it doesn't mean that it's easy. Like, it takes a lot on them. I think people underestimate how much it could be. Look at how that guy was cramping out of the court as if he was 92. You wouldn't think that he's out here winning titles anyhow this year. But we'll see anyways. But I think I'll end with that. I believe in you, ATP.
That's a nice way to end. I like that.
2026, okay? I'm trying to be positive here. Believe in you. But yeah, guys, we just want to do a quick wrap up. I think the next time we'll pod probably right before WTA. Actually, what's going on right now?
Yeah.
Paris Rolex Masters?
The Paris Masters, that's end of October. So that's, a couple of weeks. And your boy's playing, Lucy. He's on the entry list.
Show him.
Arthur.
I need to be there, man. I need to see him, man. Like, we literally have not seen Fils this whole year.
Since the French. Yeah. Well, no. So he did play US.
I'm saying, like, in person. No, he didn't play in thingy.
I'm sure he came back. He played
He did not play the US Open. We did not see him at the US
Open. Not US Open. I'm saying he played a warm-up tournament. I'm pretty sure.
Yeah, he did. I think he played somewhere in Canada or something like that. I can't remember. He played, but yeah. But next week, the Rolex, it's starting at basically in 2 weeks.
Yeah.
The 27th. The quality starts on Saturday. But yeah, so in 2 weeks, we'll have that. So maybe, you know, at the end of that, because it will be WTA final starting right after that as well. So, yeah.
Because, that's pretty much the last tournament before the year-end finals. But no, I'm glad we did this pod to, like, give Coco her flowers and address some things that needed addressing.
And address some things that needed to be addressed. See, guys, I'm not saying don't yap, because I chat a lot of crap. I was saying Iga was not going to win a title this year, and she shut my ass up. But the difference between you and I is that when after that happens, I come back and say, you know what? My bad, bro. I already said that. But you people don't say that. You even find something else. Now, because even now that she won, people are trying to say, oh, she's an end-of-year merchant. Shut up, man. Shut up. Oh, go and brush your teeth.
What the hell?
You see what I'm saying?
Basically, you can't win. Like,
you can't win.
You can't win.
Listen, whatever she says, whatever she does, you can't win.
Whatever. To that, I say whatever.
Whatever. And like I said, come get your trophy, bro. Come get your trophy. Come get that 1,000 title and the slam out of her hand. Come get it. Exactly. With that being said, guys, we'll catch you guys in the next pod. See ya.